is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Stan Johnson, head men's basketball coach at Loyola Marymount University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com.
When much is given, much is required. And when you put on that Shaker Heights uniform, it's more than basketball. It's being able to be a role model as a student athlete.
Danny Young has been the head boys basketball coach at Shaker Heights High School since 2009, after coaching under Hall of Fame coach Bob Watson in various roles since 1993. Young has won over 200 games as the leader of the Raiders program and taken the team to 6 regional tournaments in the state of Ohio. Young has coached numerous standout players in his career, including Terry Rozier of the Charlotte Hornets. Young's son Daniel will be a senior next fall and is one of the top prep players in the state of Ohio. Danny played his college basketball at Hiram College, where he was a 4-year letter winner, 2-time team captain, and was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2011. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Our roster of shows is growing, so don't forget to check out all our other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, Courtside Culture, and our team-focused NBA pods, Cavalier Central, Knuck a Few Buck, 305 Culture, Daily Thunder, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, Spanning the Spurs, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, Lakers Fast Break, and At the Buzzer. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Email us info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Have a notebook handy as you listen to this episode with Danny Young, boys basketball head coach at Shaker Heights High School in the state of Ohio. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, and we are pleased to welcome to the podcast the head coach at Shaker Heights High School in Cleveland, Ohio, Danny Young. Danny, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Good evening, and thank you, Mike, for having me tonight. I'm looking forward to having a great conversation with you.
Absolutely. We are excited to have you on, be able to dig into all the great things that you've been able to do in your career in basketball, both as a player back in your younger days and now as a coach at Shaker Heights High School. So let's go back in time to when you were a young kid growing up in Akron. Tell us a little bit about your first experiences with the game of basketball.
Well, my first experience wasn't, you know, as positive as I would have liked it. But first off, I started playing football. Football was that burning desire, because back in the early 80s, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers were, you know, just that team that I really truly admired. I just loved the athleticism of Len Swann, and I always wanted to be a wide receiver like Len Swann. So I played football. And I wish I would have understood the game a little bit better, because the coach wanted to put me at defensive end, which, because I was kind of tall, you know, had decent speed, you know, so that would have been the perfect position for me as I got older, but I didn't know the game as well. So I kind of got frustrated, but my mom wouldn't let me quit, because back then, once you start something, you have to see it through. And she said, if you don't want to do it at the end of the season, I'll support that process, but you will complete the entire season. So I completed the season, didn't play much because I was kind of frustrated because I wasn't the receiver. We had a ton of receivers better than me. And then after that, I took up basketball, you know, just started playing in the parks, just playing in the yard, you know, playing up the street around the corner with different friends and family members that had hoops in their driveways. And then I transitioned into Perkins Middle School, tried out for the team both years, grade 7 and grade 8, did not make it either year. And once again, my mom and dad did not make any excuses or want to speak with the coach or the principal. Really, they didn't say anything. Like, just do better. Try harder next time. You know what I mean?
So right.
I just started going down to the Urban League, downtown Akron, playing against older gentlemen that were either ex-high school stars, ex-college players, maybe some semi-pro guys that just really understood the game. And it was really 3-on-3. It really wasn't a lot of full court. Because you had to share the court, because it was like random kids playing on one end and then those old school guys playing on the other end. It was just some very hard-nosed, competitive 3-on-3. And it just taught me how to play, because you can't hide in 3-on-3. You got to know how to move without the ball. You got to be able to rebound. You have to pass. You have to screen. You have to really have a good feel for the game. So I transitioned into Buchtel High School. And then I was successful. I finally made the team. And then from there, you know, had some success.
Do you ever use that story of you not making your middle school team with your kids in your program? So when you go down, let's say you're talking to middle school kids or you're talking to kids that are involved in your youth program. Do you ever have that discussion of, hey, look, just because this door closed for you temporarily this year because you didn't make the team, I want you to be able to stick with it and help them to understand that a lot of times, especially with the game of basketball, the development process is long-term. Do you ever use that story with them?
I use that story all the time, and they look at me like I'm crazy. But I do use it. I use it a lot to let them know, you know, the door is never closed. And I have a great example of that with a kid, and I don't think he would mind me using his name. Harry Carroll, I think he's a student right now at The Ohio State. Super smart kid, hard-nosed kid. I cut him as a junior, but no parent meeting. Parent didn't need to meet with me or anything. Harry didn't need to meet with me. He just took it like a man and walked out the gym. And he came back his senior year, and he was just a different young man. Lean, mean, in shape, can get up and down, was strong as an ox. He was competing against my guys that probably were going to start that year. And the gym was just buzzing about Harry Carroll. I mean, to the point where, like, all the returning guys that you knew they were going to make the team were coming to me like, Coach, you have to get this guy a serious look, right? And I already knew I was going to do that, because I'm just watching him go at the guys that were on my team pretty much already. And he was just holding his own if not exceeding, you know, the competitive play against those guys. And then he made the team. And then he worked out so well during the preseason and during some of the scrimmages and the first couple games. He played a lot to a point where he was so productive, I had to start him. And Harry started for me as a senior after being cut as a junior. And we went all the way to the district championship. And I think we lost in the district championship to Euclid that year. But I use that story all the time because a lot of the kids remember Harry, remember how he got cut, remember how he came back bigger, faster, stronger, in better shape, better condition, and just with a mentality that I'm going to fill the role of, I'm going to be the toughest guy on the court and do all those things that the other guys may not do and the things that may not show up in a stat book. So I love that story about Harry Carroll.
Did he tell you like what he did over the summer to really go back and improve his game and improve his body? Did you guys have that conversation at any point during that season?
Actually, we did on his own. He didn't pay for all these fancy trainers or anything like that. He just worked out in our weight room or at a gym that he had a membership at, lifted weights, conditioned, and just got in the gym and just worked on his skills to a point where he's able to run up and down, make a layup, make a free throw. He was strong enough to guard the other big. He had the strength of a, I would say like a 6'5", 6'6 guy, but he was only like 6'2 and a half, but wide body strong. And his job was to go in there and just, you know, lay on the other team's big, you know, grab every rebound, offensive and defensive, dive on the floor, just muck the game up, just make the game very, you know, physical and erratic. And he filled that void very, very well. And I'm very proud of him. Proud. Story.
That's a great story. And I think it's one that, yeah, when you think about just, again, when we look at how the youth basketball system is set up, and this will kind of go into my next question as well, but you think about how travel teams are set up today and you got third grade and there, this is the A team and this is the B team and who's going to be on there. And people are kind of jockeying for position, so to speak, to try to get into this team or that team. And then here's a kid who doesn't even make the team when he's a junior in high school. And then he comes back the following year as a senior, puts work in and makes the team. And then not only that, but becomes a starter, an important part of what was obviously a very successful team. And I think when I listen to you talk about just the way that you grew up and that particular story, I think about how different it is today with the way kids grow up in the game of basketball. And you mentioned just, you know, being at the rec center and being out at the parks and playing 3-on-3 and playing pickup basketball and playing with older guys, whether it's college players or adults or whoever it may be. And it's just that the systems now are so different. So when you think back to your own experiences out on the playground and you developing and becoming a better player, because obviously just like Harry, you had a similar situation in that you didn't make the team for 2 years in a row. Yep. So you obviously had to go and put some time in and work and try to get better. So what do you remember about that time from, let's say, the transition from junior high school to high school and then on through your high school career? What did you do to become a better player back in those days?
I think the biggest piece growing up in the city of Akron, you could find a park on the west side, east side, south side, north side, any side of town, suburbs. You can go anywhere and find some quality basketball. So first off, you know, in my driveway had a makeshift hoop, you know, one of them cheap hoops you get at. Back then it was Kmart, now it's Walmart. You know what I mean?
So you were one step ahead of me because I had a piece of plywood that my dad cut into the shape of a fan-shaped backboard with a big giant pole and some U-clamps that hooked that fan backboard onto that pole. So you were one step ahead of me if you had a hoop that got bought at a store.
I had a hoop that got bought at a store, so I'm one step ahead of you there.
No doubt you were.
But there was a park right up the street from where I live called Perkins Pool. Either I was in my yard or up there at the pool or at Ed Davis or at Summit Lake Rec Center, the big gym on the north side, or Krogan Park out in Fairline, which is a suburb, or the big gym down there at Akron University. And I just tried to play against guys that were just way better than me and get used to the strength, the speed, the physicality, the skill level. And I just worked and worked and worked. So my routine was go to school, run home, do the homework real quick. If I had a few chores, knock those out, go to the Urban League. Urban League's not open. I'm at a park and just working, 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 working to a point where I developed on my own, like I said, a jump shot. You know, I was known as a 3-point shooter. I can get to the rim a little bit. I can rebound a little bit. I can get up and down athletically. But I was known as a 3-point shooter. And that's something that developed over the course of a couple summers just through repetition. And so I'm watching these guys now and they're paying, and I'm not knocking any trainers. Kids should have trainers. I think it's very productive and useful to have a trainer, but you can just get a ball and get to a rim and you can work and get yourself better and be able to shoot a mid-range jump shot, shoot a 3-point shot, shoot off the dribble. And I just had those older guys that kind of mentored me after they whip up on you a little bit. And then they'll pull you off the side after they win the game, or you got a break and play, and just kind of tell you, kind of, here's why I was able to do what I did to you. And so here's something you need to think about when you're going against me. You know, they kind of gave you tips in terms of how you can improve your play, because all these guys were, like I said, superstars in their own right during their time period. They played at the Division I, Division II college level. And so I'm going against those guys every single day. And it wasn't a day we didn't play. I'm talking about Monday through probably Saturday, and every now and then on Sunday, we would play as well. So it was a big jug of cold water that you freeze at night, you know, and then you take it to the park and it's so hot outside. By the time you get done playing 3, 4, 5 games, you got a nice cold beverage of water to kind of refresh yourself from going so hard. But now you take them kids outside. Oh, it's too hot, coach.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
You know, it's just different. So that helped me, you know, become all city, you know, at Buchtel. At that time, it wasn't AAU, so I didn't have a lot of exposure. And a couple schools called me my senior year. It wasn't like my phone was ringing off the hook, even though I had a pretty good high school career. And Brad Ellis from Hiram College called me and introduced me to Hiram. And I took a visit, and I had heard about Hiram because I had a cousin who graduated from Hiram, and she called and told me after we spoke about, hey, Hiram College called me. Can you tell me a little bit about Hiram? Because I know you went there. And she just stressed how great of an academic institution it was and that I should take a serious look at it. Went down, liked the small atmosphere. Like I said, I wasn't getting 20, 30 calls, or I didn't have 35 offers or anything like that. So I kind of faced reality knowing I'm going to play at the D3 level, and went down there and had a pretty successful career. Was voted captain my sophomore, junior, and senior year. Had a great freshman year. Went far our junior and senior year in the tournament. And then I got inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2013 at Hiram. So it worked out.
That's very cool. It's always good to hear when somebody ends up in a place that turns out to be such a positive for them, both in terms of their basketball career and just their life in general. And it sounds like Hiram was that place for you, that you got to a basketball program that fit with your personality, that fit with your playing style, that gave you an opportunity to play and be successful. And sometimes we all know all we got to do is look at the transfer portal in Division I today and know that doesn't always happen. And I do think it was probably a little bit of a different mentality then, in terms of, I think kids probably stuck around at least a little bit more than they do today. Now it seems like regardless of what level, you could start back in AAU and go through high school and into college, and just talk about people jumping ship from one team, one program, one college to another. It's way more prevalent, obviously, now than it ever was back in the time that you and I were playing. I want to revisit your playground time and just ask you, were there one or two guys that you remember from that time that really took you under their wing? And was there any pieces of advice that they gave you? Because you mentioned, you know, guys trying to give you some little tips after they beat up on you a little bit on the court. But do you remember one or two guys particularly that stood out, that kind of watched out for you when you were younger and really took you under their wing and kind of helped you to get into games and that kind of thing?
I would say my cousin, and I'm sure you know this name, Jimmy Gooden.
Yep, absolutely.
Played at Central Howard High School. Legend in Akron. Still's down here doing things around the game of basketball. So I would find it like a privilege to play alongside him. Sometimes he would pick me up and let me play with him. And if you weren't paying attention, you had to pay attention at all times, because he was a grand wizard at passing that ball for a layup or passing that ball to a corner jump shot or back out on the wing or top of the key. So when I first used to play with him, I could tell there was a difference in skill level. I felt my skill level was not where his was. But as time went on and I got better and better, got a little taller, a little stronger, I got used to that pace. And like I said, he was mentoring me and coaching me. And pretty much he just said, you got to pay attention. You got to run the court hard. You got to work hard at all times and do not ever, ever take plays off. When you're in between those lines, you have to be engaged and locked in mentally and physically. That's the one bit of advice that he shared with me. And he also shared with me how to make others better. You know, yeah, you can score, you can get to the rim, but I want to see you break people off sometimes and then dump that sucker down for a hoop dunk or a kick out or a hook pass or a better shot at the top of the key. So I tried to kind of get that little Magic Johnson type feel, you know, trying to share that ball on the playground and get a few assists. Another guy was Miles Meadows, who played with Jimmy at Central Howard. He was a bigger, stronger guard and just had a motor and an engine, just had a major engine in terms of getting the ball off the backboard, pushing it hard until he got stopped. And if he didn't get stopped, he's finishing. If he did get stopped, he's making a play. And what he taught me is you got to go harder. Your motor is not open up enough. You're not competing on both ends. You got to do other things besides just score. Let me see you come to the glass a little bit. Let me see you guard the best player. You know what I mean? Things like that. Just being gritty, grimy, and tough and physical, I would say would be the best advice that Miles kind of gave me. And never backing down from a challenge, you know, being competitive at all times, you know, win or lose or draw, just be competitive.
Absolutely.
So those are two guys that I took the most from.
All right. So I want to ask you in relation to that. So there's obviously some great lessons that you learned from those guys who were older than you that you learned on the playground. And for our audience, your son is an outstanding high school player right now that plays for you at Shaker Heights High School. So tell our audience a little bit about your son, his career, where he is right now. And then what I'd like to do is kind of compare and contrast your upbringing in the game versus his kind of in your mind and how you try to go about instilling some of those lessons that you learned on the playground. How did you try to instill those lessons in him as he was growing up in the game?
Well, he started AAU around third, fourth grade. He played for Brad Downs and SMAC. Brad kind of was going around to all the suburban schools in our area and just plucking kids he thought that had potential. And he came up to my wife and I and said, you know, I think Daniel has potential. Can I coach him up? And I really wasn't into the AAU thing that much. And I really wasn't trying to push him that early, but I said, hey, let's get it going. And he played for Brad and I wouldn't say he was the best kid on the team, but he wasn't the worst either. And I just saw things like, okay, I think I can help him in that area. I think we worked on this. If he can do this, that, and the third and get better. But what I liked about that process once, my wife called and told me that, after I had to leave, I went to one of his tournament games and he played okay. He didn't play his best, but I gave him a little dap and I said, son, I got to shoot to practice. Do you want to go? He said, no, Dad, I think I'm gonna stay with Mom. And then my wife called me and she told me, she said, my wife said, hey Danny, your son just asked me to take him to the gym or the park because he wants to get better. So on his own, he knew that he wasn't at the level that some of those other kids were at. And at that time, when you're that age, the better kids are normally your better ball handlers. If you have a good handle, a good feel for dribbling, you can get to your spots better. And it just helps everything. And we hadn't worked on that. So he kept playing AAU, got a little bit better, a little bit better. He started getting into the development process of it. But I just didn't think he had the grittiness or the griminess that I had, you know, growing up in the inner city, going against those tough-minded guys from the city. You know, I've been blessed enough. I'm nowhere near rich, you know, but I'm able to live in the suburbs, you know what I mean? So he had that kind of mild-mannered type game. And so we used to always go against a team called the Mansfield Cavs once he got to about fifth, sixth, seventh grade, I think it was. And they would just whoop up on us. And then after the game, the coach would always come to me and say, hey, I know the coach not playing your son as much as you probably like, but once he gets in there, I mean, we've played to like five times. Man, I love your kid. If you ever want to bring him down to Mansfield, I think he'd be a good piece for us. You see how, you know, we whoop up on y'all and how we play. It's a little bit different than how y'all play. And I think your son would benefit from that. And I started thinking about it. I was like, ooh, Mansfield, though. I can't find nothing like that in Akron. So I said, okay, I'm going to try this. So I would drive him down to Mansfield. I think we practiced once or twice a week. And I remember when I walked into the practice gym, it reminded me of, remember the movie Rocky, when Rocky got whooped up on by Clubber Lang, and his buddy Carl Weathers, Apollo, told him that, man, you lost that because you lost the Eye of the Tiger. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go back to those humble beginnings, back to that gym where Apollo learned how to be tough and grimy when he beat Rocky, and then Rocky came back and beat him. So remember that part where they walk into that gym in their suits and everything, and then all the guys are in that gym hitting on the bags and all that, and they stop.
Yep.
And they look at Rocky and Apollo walking in, and they had that look like, I'm about to knock your block off. That's the same look when I walked in that gym and turned my son loose. All those kids stopped and just started looking at us like, I can tell they're not quite from these parts. You know what I mean? And I told my wife, I said, this is exactly what I have been looking for. And it took him like maybe a tournament to kind of get used to it and a few more practices. And after a while, you saw he got, as the kids call it, he got a little more sauce in his game. He tried a little more creative things at the rim. He could take a hit better and not cry. You know, he just got a lot tougher. And that was the beginning of what I learned at the park. He learned it in Mansfield Cavs AAU organization. And then from there, it just got better and better. And of course, once I saw he had a little talent for it, then I started showing some things that people showed me in terms of being able to shoot the ball at a high level, being able to get to your spot, having a nice handle, being in shape, being able to get up and down the court, being able to defend your spot, you know what I mean, and make others around you better and just be a good teammate. So I started kind of getting involved more, had a few trainers, but really it was kind of myself and Daniel kind of just at a gym, you know, getting those reps in and trying to teach them the game the right way and be tough as you can. And so now he had a really good middle school coach. My assistant coach, Kevin Foster, coached him in grade 7 and grade 8. And he did a very good job teaching him how to be even more aggressive. And I think it really prepared him well for being able to start, you know, at the high school. And, you know, it was kind of tough at times because, you know, I used to hear the rumblings just a little bit, but I didn't let it bother me because I knew the kid worked his tail off. Oh, he's only starting as a freshman because his dad's the coach. So what really helped tremendously to kind of halt some of that freshman year, game one of his career, first game of his career as a freshman starting varsity at Shaker Heights. We play against Akron Buchtel High School against, you know, future NBA player, Chris Livingston, you know, and Daniel comes out and scores 27-5-5. First game out the gate, very first game out the gate. So that quieted a whole bunch of people once game one at 27. And then three games later, we play our rival, Garfield Heights. You know, you got the story of Daniel Young Jr. and you got Sonny Johnson Jr. They go against each other with Michi over there. And he comes out and puts up 31-6-5. And so now some of that rumbling of, okay, this kid maybe is pretty good. Maybe he isn't just about his dad. And so once he started showing me that he had the ability to be pretty good, I just put the pedal to the metal. And then I really increased the training around strength conditioning, jumping rope, more skill work in the gym. First to the gym, last to leave. I wanted his teammates to see him in the gym as they're walking in and then in the gym as they're walking out. But they're more than welcome to join us and train with us because we are a team. And then even when we left the gym, we went to another gym after homework was done to put up more reps. And so I think his success that he's having right now, like this year, he had a great year this year. First team all district, second team all state, second team Fab 50, Cleveland.com. He scored his 1,000th point as a junior. He's had a great year. And I just think it's the fruit of his labor. Like right now, I'm on the phone with you or on this recording. He's up at a gym right now by himself, shooting the ball, you know, at a gym that we go to. And he already had his strength conditioning workout at 5 o'clock. So did that, ran home, took a protein shake. As I'm pulling in, he's backing out. Said, Dad, I'm going to the gym, get my reps up. I said, all right. I said, if I get off this call, I might come up there and take you through a little quick routine too, to double it. So he puts the work in. So for anybody that thinks that or says that, I wish I could show him, but he's showing him. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's showing it. So, no, he's a good little player. Has an offer from Akron University, Cleveland State. And then we're hearing from some MAC schools, some schools in the OVC. You know, you got maybe one or two Big Ten schools sniffing around. You know, this is a tough market right now with this transfer portal. So we're just going to work hard. He's playing very well with C2K Elite AAU team, going against some other top guards in the country, playing well. So far, we're 8-2 with our first two tournaments, and he's playing well. He's playing real well.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com. What advice would you have for other high school coaches out there, or just coaches in general, when coaching their own children? What has worked for you? What's maybe something that didn't go as smoothly as you thought? Just some advice that you would have for somebody who's coaching their own kid.
I think just make sure their kid is the hardest worker. Make sure that the talent level is there for them to be very, very successful on the court. Be a humble, nice kid that others want to be around. And one thing that helped Daniel, I used to be the principal of Woodbury Elementary School, a 5-6 building. And Daniel came there in grade 6 from Revere. He went to Revere kindergarten through 5th grade, and then he's been a Shaker since 6th grade. And at the end of the year, we have what are called clap outs, where you clap out the 6th grade class and send them off to the middle school. And I'm reading the names of each 6th grade classroom, and then Daniel's class come up, and Daniel Young. All right. And then at the end of the ceremony, I'm shaking hands and kissing babies with all the family members that are there and telling the parents it's been a great year. And, you know, appreciate all your support. About 15 kids ran up on me afterwards and said, Mr. Young, is Daniel Young your son? Now, this is the end of the school year.
That's awesome.
They did not know the entire school year that Daniel was my son. So what that told me was he didn't walk around the building like, I can run the show. I can get extra milk. I can cut the line. You know, I can do it, say what I want to say. I can come to office when I want to. He didn't carry himself like that. He acted like he was just any other kid in the building. And there were a lot of kids that never made that connection that was my son. So that just showed me, and that shows us in this conversation, kind of how he carries himself. And his teammates really love him, and he loves them. And it's working out very well. You know, you've had a couple bumps in the road, as always, you know, but overall it's been a good experience. So I would say just be humble, be a hardworking kid, love the process of getting better, and love the process. Not only you get better, but how are you helping your teammates get better?
Absolutely. Ever been any rebellion is probably too strong of a word, but any friction between the two of you where you were pushing him in one direction or wanted him to work on something or add something or do something that maybe he just didn't necessarily agree with? Was there ever a situation like that? And if there was, how'd you guys work through that?
Yeah. You know, there's certain things that I like him to prove in terms of his body. You know what I mean? Like Like, we had a conversation today. I said, man, you got to work on your calves more. We got stairs and we have dumbbells. We have all kind of jump ropes. Why don't you do that every other day in addition to the weightlifting that your trainer is taking you through? So that's something that it's not friction, but it's something I like to see him add without me saying it again and again.
Yep.
So he asked me, he said, you don't think my calves are developed enough? You know, so I think he heard me today. And then I kind of said, no, I think they could be bigger. So, yeah, that. But you know what? I got good coaches. Kevin Foster, Adrian Lewis, Jalen Head, Ron Burnett, but especially Ron Burnett. Ron Burnett is like the godfather on my staff. He was really with Bob Wanson, who I succeeded. Rest his soul. He passed away and then the administration offered me the job. But Ron B., after Bob passed, joined my staff, and he's been with me since it's been 12 years. And so I was a barracuda. I was a mean son of a gun on Daniel, because I thought I got to yell at him more. I got to show everybody that I'm harder on him. And he would just tell me after games, he'd say, look, you can listen to me if you want to. I know you're the head coach and I know it's your show, but you are just too hard on him. You need to ease up on him. And if you're too hard, you're going to break him. It's too much, Danny. I know what you're trying to do. You need to calm down. And so I thought about it. And then I came home to my wife. I said, do you agree with Ron B. just said when we went to dinner? She said, yes. Yes. So what I decided to do is during games, I don't really coach him. I might coach the effort, or I might coach, you could have been a little bit better on defense. But I let my assistant, Kevin Foster, do most of the talking to him. Like when I take him out, I might say a little bit, but not much. Kevin's the one that does the tough coaching on him and telling him what he sees and what he can do better. So I kind of passed that rein on to Kevin, who had him in middle school and really understood how he works best and how he can be successful. So that's been really good. But I can't remember a last big rock'em sock'em argument around basketball. I've calmed down a lot in my latter years. In the 90s, when I first started, some of my players come back and say, is that you, coach? You done got soft. I mean, you know, it's a different time. I just don't think the kids can take it anymore like it was back in the 90s, you know, where you really getting into them and a lot of yelling. So I've kind of transitioned into more of a teacher. I was a teacher then, but I'm really a teacher now. I try to just teach a little bit more than yell. And if I feel myself, I just say something that I shouldn't say. I pull out that drill Bob Wanson taught me. It's called the 10-second drill, where you put them in the center circle and you tell them all, you got 10 seconds to hit that door and be out this gym. And if you're not out, if every one of you are not out here in 10 seconds, you're going to pay dearly the next day. So I just send them out and we try it again the next day. So I try not to be too overly aggressive or overly aggressive verbally on them, because today's kid don't front mean. You embarrassed me. You're fronting in front of, you know, they tune you out anyway. So I just kind of talk it up. And then, you know, if that's not working, we got to figure out how to get more oxygen to your brain. So we got to put you on that baseline or that sideline and figure out what kind of get you to concentrate a little bit better. You know,
absolutely. Was there a moment in your coaching career where you came to the realization of, hey, the kids are reacting to me and the way and the style that I coach differently than they had before? Or was it more of a gradual over a period of years that you started to see that change? Or was there ever a light bulb moment where you're like, ooh, I got to kind of tone some of what I used to be back in order to get the most out of the kids? Because obviously you're changing your style to be able to maximize what you can get out of your kids. I'm sure if you still thought that way X was going to get you more out of the kids, that you would still be doing, you know, X, Y, and Z, but you're trying to maximize and become the best coach you can be. So was it a light bulb moment or was it gradual?
I say it was three things. I said, the first thing was I was leaving games with a sore back because I used to wear dress shoes, like really nice dress suit, shoes and suits and shirts and ties. Because when Bob was the head coach, that's what I saw him do. So when I became a head coach, I made my whole staff wear suits. And then eventually by the third and fourth quarter, the top button is undone. The tie is loosened up. Then eventually I take the tie off, throw it to my wife. Then eventually I take the jacket off, throw it to my wife. Then the next thing, I unbutton the top two buttons and I might as well even wear the doggone suit. And then I'm right. just to get their attention, I used to slam my feet on the ground loudly. Just, I mean, some coach could whistle, you know.
I could never do that.
I could never do that. So
Mike's really good at blowing the whistle.
Yeah, I like to blow the whistle. I use the whistle at basketball camp all the time. I use it to my advantage. I use it in my phys ed class. It's a great tool, but I cannot just whistle without an apparatus to help me. Let's put it that way.
Man, I love coaches that have that skill, that rip. I mean, it's just a great whistle. You know, so my trademark was banging my nice shoes on the ground to get them to kind of raise their intensity level. And I started doing that so much, man, I would go home and I would have a sore lower back. The second thing that told me I need to kind of calm it down was my wife told me, she said, "Danny, you are too intense on that sideline. And I think the boys are at times feeding off of your energy in a negative way." You know, the 90s kids could take that. Like, if I'm hooping and hollering, I'm jumping around, I'm really into it, I'm slamming my feet on the ground, I'm clapping loudly. The 90s kids could kind of utilize that, bottle it up, and then boom, explode and just jump on other teams. I would say early thousands kids, it lost its effect some. And then the third piece was, I just came to the realization from my sore back, my wife saying, calm down. And then for me just saying, and just learning more about the game, watching some of my favorite coaches on the sideline, coach Division One, you know, going to other games, watching those coaches that are getting down to Columbus, you know, because, you know, after you lose, you know, you start, you know, you get your tickets, get your hotel, you want to go see what is it that these teams are doing to get themselves down to the Final Four in Columbus. This year's in Dayton, but in previous years in Columbus. And I just studied the demeanor of the coaches and kind of how they, you know, take their time, where they walk back away from the bench, talk for maybe 30 seconds with the staff, walk back in the huddle, and now the last 30 seconds is strategy. So I just watched it, and I didn't see too many coaches doing what I was doing. You know what I mean? So So those three pieces kind of showed me that I can still be gritty, grimy, tough-minded, enthusiastic, just in a different way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that when you look at somebody like yourself who's coached for a number of years, mm-hmm. and you have to, I think, evolve. You have to grow. You have to learn. You have to do things in such a way that still fits who you are as a coach. Because if you're not who you genuinely are, kids sniff that out pretty quick. But I think we all evolve and we all change. And if we don't, we're going to be left behind without question.
Exactly.
When it comes to being able to connect with kids. And not only are you connecting with kids on the basketball floor as a coach, but also obviously you're connecting with them in the various positions that you've held as an educator. And we can get into that a little bit too. But, you know, kids are not the same as they were when you started your career in teaching and coaching, and they're not the same. You and I started in about the same era, and it's certainly a different group of kids that you're working with. You have to figure out and just know what you need to do in order to be able to reach those kids. So when you think back to that time when you were still playing, when did coaching come on your radar? When did you know that at some point I'd like to become a basketball coach? When did that come on your radar?
When Brad Ellis, the coach, connected the players to some of the coaches around the local area by hiring, will have camps, and they will hire us to work the camps. I just enjoyed that entire process. And when I was at Hiram, they had me do career interest inventory to kind of help guide me into a major. And I got a lot of hits with education and coaching. And so I knew I wanted to be a teacher. Around my sophomore year, I kind of declared my major. And I had a wonderful advisor, rest her soul, Dr. Kathy Feather, who really taught me how to write at the college level, how to budget my time, how to become that collegiate type student athlete that was going to be able to graduate from Hiram. She really gave me some good advice to kind of make it through. She was wonderful. Her and Frank Hemphill were probably the two most influential people at Hiram to help me through, in addition to my coaches, Brad Ellis and Mike Marcinko. So I just knew I wanted to be a difference maker. And I also knew that I wanted to be that guy that was able to not only win games, but help kids get to school. And I'm proud to say that since I've been a head coach in 12 years, every one of my seniors, they have gone off to Division I, II, or III. My claim to fame, you know, I was Terry Rozier's high school coach, and Terry Rozier plays for the Charlotte Hornets. Another big-time player I've coached is Issa Ahmad, played for Bobby Huggins at West Virginia. Now he's in Honduras. And I can name a whole slew of other kids. Dale Bonner right now, Christian Guest, Najee Hardaway, Eric Mudd, Justin Phillips. And I don't want to start naming names and forget guys, but we've coached a lot of guys to get to that collegiate level. And that's what it's all about. Yeah, I enjoy having the 6 district titles, the 6 regional appearances. 3 out of 6 are regional final games, but I have yet to get to the Final Four, so I'm still trying to accomplish that. But more importantly, what I'm very proud of, that we're helping African-American young men, or just young men in general who make our team, no matter what your color, race, or creed is. If you want to get to that next level, our program will work you to that level, ensure you have great academics, ensure you understand the process of ACT, SAT, and we have enough influence now, we can pick the phone up and get you opportunity, but you have to seal the deal, you know, with your work ethic, your skill, your personality, your communication method or mode, how you carry yourself on off the court. We can make the path a little bit softer for you and open the door for you, but they got to seal the deal. So we got about 50 kids out there in the course of 12 years that are at that next level. And that's what I'm most proud of, because hopefully by having a great education, you're going to become a really good person. Hopefully you become a better father when it's that time. Hopefully you become a better contributing member of our society and make the world we live in a better place. And that makes all the world. But I'll tell you something super cool I got yesterday. Super cool. This kid doesn't even go to school at Shaker Heights. I coach him in AAU. His name is Aiden Lau. He goes to Hudson High School. But I coached Aiden for like maybe 4 or 5 years in AAU. And I love that kid to death, man. He's a hard worker, tough-nosed kid, big, strong body and frame. And he gave me the best shout out that I've ever had in a long time, man, because he committed to, I think it's Air Force, if I'm not mistaken. He got a full Division I scholarship to Air Force Academy playing football. And he gave me like 2 or 3 sentences. You know how they do on social media? They got the thank yous.
Yeah, absolutely.
And man, I got to be very honest. And it made me smile, and I was moved to emotion. I got to be very honest with you. That he recognized me, and I didn't think I was doing that much for the kid. But we did have a great bond. And, you know, you just never know the impact you're making on kids in your program, kids out of your program. Just whenever you have a, you know, interaction with kids, they latch on everything you say, but more importantly, they latch on to everything that you do. You know what I mean? And the bottom line is, I think most kids just want to know how much you care. You know what I mean? So that was pretty cool, man. That was a cool day yesterday.
That's very cool. I think one of the things that I always say when I'm talking with coaches and you start thinking about why you do what you do. And obviously we all like to win and we're all competitive and that's why we're in this business. But there's also this other piece of it of, you do want to have an impact on kids. You do want to act as a mentor. You do want to be able to have that kid give you that shout out 3 or 4 years after you coached him. Or if you're talking about a high school player, maybe you don't get that shout out until 10 years later when they invite you to their wedding or they call you up and they say, "Hey coach, I got a new job," or I just had my first kid," or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And those are the moments that are really impactful. And I think what you just said there, Danny, about you don't know what those kids are taking from you mm-hmm. on a daily basis. Like it could be something that, and I'm sure you probably have things, I know I do, that a coach said to me that if I went back to that coach today and said, "Hey coach, do you remember when you said X, Y, or Z to me or about me," or maybe it was just something they were talking to the entire team about. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, that particular moment had such a huge impact on me. And I think we all have those things, but if you went back and asked that coach, they'd probably have no recollection of ever even saying those things. And that's why I think it's really important what you just said, is to keep in mind that when you're in front of a group of kids or when you're in front of one kid, that the words that you use and the things that you do are super powerful and even more powerful oftentimes than what we realize. So when you think about yourself as a mentor, and you mentioned a few of them, you know, you got to be, make sure that you're, you know, it's not just what you say, it's what you do, talking about emphasizing academics and all those pieces that you mentioned. How do you go about making sure that the kids in your program understand not just the kind of basketball player that you want them to be, but also the kind of person and student that you want them to be? Is that a formal conversation? Is that a meeting? Is that something that's just been built into the culture at this point? How do you get that across? How do you act in that mentor role with the kids that are part of your program?
Well, it happens a couple ways. We start practice at center circle on Tuffy Raider right there in the center of the gym. And it might be a food for thought conversation at Alliance of Basketball. It might be something that's happening in our world that I want to just connect to what we're trying to work on for that day. We end practice that way. I might use something as a teachable moment in terms of something that can make them a better person, better athlete, a better kid. Video sessions. Oftentimes I eat up a lot of that time just by telling some of the stories of how I grew up and some of the lessons I learned from others and how it connected to what we're trying to do and at the next game we're trying to win. And I revert back to all the previous teams I've had and kind of use different lessons from them that might be applicable to what we're trying to work on. When we go out to eat, you know, team bonding and build, you know, team bonding at the dinner table, we have these conversations, you know. So it's a lot of ways that I try to build that culture of, yes, I'm going to be tough on you. Yes, I want you to be a good basketball player, but I really care about your personal development. And they see me a lot because now I'm at the high school. So I'm able to have even more connections with them informally in the hallways, in the cafeteria, out in front as they're walking in the building, out front when they're leaving the building, in the weight room, you know. So I'm always dropping those, you know, those life lessons that can help them be better, you know, young men. And then now with social media, I think you got to kind of reach them where they are, where I text them a lot in terms of motivational quotes, maybe a quick, you know, you gotta have separation of church and state. So every now and then I might send a Bible verse, but I say, if you don't believe in this, I'm not trying to force my will on you, but here it is, hit delete if you don't believe in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I've never been caught on that, but you got to be careful with that one because
yep.
There is separation of church and state. But anyway, those types of things kind of build that culture of, wow, he cares a little bit more than just about basketball. You know what I mean? And sometimes they'll pull me off to the side, like, coach, can I talk to you about this, that, and the third? And it may be about basketball or it may be about female issues, something going on at home. What would you do in this case, coach? So over time, we've built that culture. And having the counseling skills help. I'm a licensed school counselor. I've been an administrator for 16 years. I've taught third grade for 6 years. So, you know, I've worked a ton of camps. So pretty much the whole bulk of my life has been around kids and trying to be a good listener. And some kids say I'm a good storyteller. So I can find a story that can get them to see in a different light what I'm trying to say without it just being a lecture. You know what I mean? And I try to make them laugh in the midst of the story, which really gets them to kind of think about what I said. You know, I can see them in video and I might be dead serious, mad and angry within the story I'm telling, but I'm so animated with it at times. I can see them they're trying to be serious and listen to me.
Right.
But then because I'm so wild and my hands are moving and I'm jumping around the room and, you know, I talk with my hands a lot and they try to hold back the laughs, but then they just bust out laughing. Then sometimes I bust out laughing, you know what I mean? But through that laughter, some people might think, well, they're not taking you seriously, coach. They're not listening to you, but they hear every word I say because you connected with them on a level that they can receive through, yes, you're trying to be serious, but that humor really sealed it. You know what I mean?
So I know exactly. Do you connect your success and your ability to have those kinds of relationships with kids? How important has it been in your career that you've paired your coaching with your career as an educator? Because I think one of the things that we see a lot less probably today than we did back in the era when you and I grew up, almost every high school basketball coach was a teacher in, more often than not, in the high school where they were coaching. And if they weren't in the high school, they were at least within the school district. And now you have many more guys who are high school coaches who don't coach in the building, which, as someone who has coached and been a teacher in the district where I coach, I couldn't imagine being outside of the district just from a communication standpoint and just some of those challenges. But just talk to me a little bit about the connection between you as an educator and you as a coach and how those two have sort of played off of each other to maybe make you better at both roles.
I think I drive the point home to them all the time. I tell my guys, if we're having issues academically, which I don't have too many of those issues, but when I do, I'm able to rectify them pretty quickly because I'm big on texting mom and dad. And I told them I'm the biggest snitch you will ever know, you know, and I'm snitching because I love you. So I have access to progress books. So I go on progress book. And if I see someone I don't like, I'm texting mom or dad and the kid within the text. And then they jump, oh, I got it covered. I promise you, I got it. So I tell them, coaching basketball does not pay my bills. What pays the bills is my counseling job, teaching job, principal job. And I am an educator first before I am a basketball coach. And the one thing I value more so than how many points you can put in that hole or how high you can jump, how fast you can run, and how many wins you can help the team get, you have to represent us academically in those hallways. And you have to be just as competitive and be just as disciplined with your academics as you are with your athletic ability. And I frame it in ways where they can really receive it, you know? So I think I got about a good 50 stories. And sometimes I repeat, you know, number one, I might go to 20, I might go to story number 29, you know, so I got a story for pretty much everything that can relate and get them to think on a deeper level. And then I also bring in outside people, you know what I mean? I try to bring some alumni that have been very successful. If they're in town or they're local in the community, I like to bring them, you know, in the first 2 minutes of practice or in the practice and just be a blessing to the kids. You know, talk about when you walk the halls, talk about how you transition from playing sports into a career, to give them something else to think about in terms of after basketball. Because I tell them, for all of us, eventually that ball's going to stop bouncing for all of us at some point in our life. What are you going to fall back on? You're going to fall back on the relationships you have developed along the way. You're going to fall back on your education. You're going to fall back on the ability to kind of have a skill that someone says, I want to hire that guy and he can help me at my business. Or now I'm trying to really get them thinking about being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely.
My assistant coach owns his own landscaping company and he brings in his friends that own their own law firm or their own real estate company. You know, so we're trying to expand their thinking. So I try to give them experiences that's not only just about basketball, but something that's locked in on life after basketball. So just trying to build that culture and try different things, you know, to get them to think on different planes. I also bring in with the parents too now, during our parent meeting that every coach is required to do at the start of the school year. I have a local coach at the D3 level because it's not a violation for them to be able to talk, you know, to your program. Division twos and ones, it could be a violation.
Right.
The threes, you know, that I bring them in and right in the middle of my presentation, as I'm talking about the do's and don'ts and how we're going to operate this year, you know, here's our schedule. Here's what I expect. You know, I let a college coach come in and kind of talk about what they look for in a parent, what they look for in a kid. You know, listen to this guy, Coach Young. We love his kids. Here's why we like his kids. So it kind of validates me a little bit, you know, without me getting up just trying to say what what I think.
Right.
You got a college coach that you're trying to get to possibly. Let him tell you what he likes and why he's here and, you know, why he's, you know, left his family to come over here to spend an hour with us during our, you know, parent meeting. You know what I mean? So just trying different techniques to kind of change the thinking around this thing we call basketball and being a true student athlete.
Yeah, I think that those outside voices, I think, are really important. And mm-hmm. I think that they do add a tremendous amount of value to what you're trying to do. Because if you can get somebody else to back up your message or share your message in a slightly different way, then it only adds to your own credibility. And it also gives your kids an exposure and a connection to somebody else who's not in the immediate family of your program and yet can still espouse the same message that exactly. you're trying to get across to your team. And to me, that's really, really important. Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season, and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com, and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time. All right, I want to dive into a little bit of Shaker Heights basketball. Let's go back to when you were an assistant. You mentioned earlier how you worked for Coach Bob Watson, who was a legend in the Cleveland area as a high school coach. So talk a little bit about your experience coaching with Coach Watson, and then tell us about the transition from being an assistant coach to taking over the program at Shaker Heights.
Well, it started back in 1992. That was my first year in the district. I was teaching third grade at Mercer Elementary School. Dr. Bernice Stokes and Dr. Mark Freeman and Jim Paces gave me opportunity to teach, but Bernice, who hired me as a third grade teacher, told me that you cannot coach your first year. I want you to lock in on being a great educator first. Second year happens. I get acclimated to the field of teaching. Bill Trost, the human resource director, called Bernice, said, hey, can Danny coach this year? Yeah, I think I'll let him coach this year. Then he comes over to the building and say, hey, Bob Watson would like to sit down with you and talk to you. He has a JV opening, and we think you'd be great for it. And I remember when we hired you, you said that you want to be a teacher and coach. And so he said, when you leave here, go over to high school, talk to Bob. If Bob likes you, we're going to hire you. So I left Mercer, drove over to the high school, went to his office. He asked me a few questions about Hiram. He said, yeah, I heard about you. I knew about you. I heard you're a good teacher. The job is yours if you want it. I said, yeah, I want it. All right, so I'm the JV coach. Didn't know the first thing about how to organize practice, how to have practice plans, how to have everything on time, you know. So one thing I would advise young up and coming coaches, get with a guy that's like Bob. I mean, you know, first he coached George Ravlin at Iowa State, right? And so he had that Division I mindset. So Bob was detailed practice plans, everything on the clock, announcements at the bottom, three things we got to talk about after practice. And I would come and just watch his practice from 3:30 to 6. And then I practiced from 6 to 8:30. And I saved every one of his practice plans, every one of them. I have a binder for every year that I work for him. And I was his assistant for 17 years. So I got 17 binders. And so by sitting for 17 years, you learn a whole lot about how to prepare for a game, how to manage a game, which I did not know early on, how to make, you know, adjustments after timeouts, at halftime, a coach doing this to you, how you're going to counter it, you know, what are you going to say to your guys to get them to understand the counter, you know, at the end of the game, after a loss, don't say as much because you might say something you shouldn't say. Say it to next day because you might cooler minds prevail, you know. What you do after a hard fought game, do you practice hard? Do you just walk through a walkthrough? Feeding the kids, you know, pregame meals prior to them getting on the bus and having them over to your house and making it about family and how do you dress? You know, like I said, we started wearing suits and then now we evolved to just coaches' shirts and slacks and some tennis shoes. But just watching Bob really helped me evolve as a coach. I had great success as a JV coach. I did it for a long time. I think I was like 86-14 across like a 10-year span. I mean, I think I coached the only undefeated JV team because I was doing varsity stuff at the JV level because I was watching Bob every day and I just was doing what Bob was doing and then brought down to JV. And so I did that for 17 years, had some opportunities to go somewhere else and maybe apply for jobs, but I just never did it. So eventually.
I'm curious, why not? A guy who's had as much success as you had at that level, obviously there was opportunities for you, I'm sure, as you just mentioned, to go somewhere else. Yeah. So what was the thought process behind staying? Was it a comfort level with the Shaker Heights basketball program? Was it a sense of satisfaction with your positions within the Shaker Heights City School District? What was it that made you decide to stay put? The circle of friends that you had made there, what was it that kept you at Shaker?
Because I've been there so long, you know, I got very comfortable.
Yep.
Had established a positive relationship and reputation in the district. You know, I had gotten promoted pretty quickly from teacher to school counselor to assistant principal to principal. And then Dr. Freeman, the previous superintendent, allowed me to be the principal and coach. You know what I mean? So it was pretty tough to walk away from Shaker as a principal and think a district was going to pretty much pay you the same thing you're making as a principal as a
for sure.
You know, so like I mentioned, basketball wasn't paying the bills. It was the other job, but I really enjoyed the whole process of what being a coach is. You know, I just enjoyed that process. And so I just stayed, man. I just stayed and just made the best of it and learned a lot. And then eventually, unfortunately, I wish he was still here. You know, Bob's health started changing a little bit, you know, and he came over one day and said, I want to make you the associate coach. I think it's time for you to come on up. And I had turned it down twice because he asked me to come up a couple times. I said, nah, I'm going to stay on JV because I like having my own thing.
It was right.
My own thing. At that time, you know, I was watching the assistants really didn't have a lot of say-so. I mean, really didn't. You know, you had a little say-so, but not a lot. So I just said, I'm young still. You know, I'm learning a lot. Even though I'm not the varsity assistant, I'm still learning under him. I'm going to stay on JV. But then that third time he asked, I thought, I better get this varsity experience. And that was the year we went to Columbus. 1999 was my first year as the varsity assistant. And we were ranked in the nation. We were ranked like number one or two in the state. And we lost to Cincinnati Molder by 5 to get the state championship. And then few years down after that, that's when Bob asked me to be the associate head coach. And I took advantage of the opportunity, kept learning a lot, you know, and then eventually got the head job. Yep.
What was the transition like going from the assistant? And obviously you had a lot of those kids that you had coached at the JV level as you come up, and then you get to be the varsity assistant coach. But I think sometimes when you move up from an internal position where you haven't been the head coach and now suddenly you are, people start to look at you in a different light because before you were just the assistant and now you're the head coach. So how did you handle that transition from assistant coach to head coach? And what advice would you have for a coach who was about to make a similar transition?
For me, the transition, was pretty solid because, like I said, I sat so long. I was in those hot, heated meetings when people wanted to meet with Bob and they were upset about the position he's playing them or the playing time or I don't like the way you're doing this. And I was in those meetings. He would invite me to sit in with him. So I was able to see how he handled adversity as it pertained to parents or adversity as it pertained to player relationships. And then like my skill with being a principal, a lot of principal stuff is kind of very similar. So my day job helped me deal with being an effective communicator when issues might come up and you have to kind of make them go away through effective communication, just strategizing and problem solving. So it's a win-win for what I need as a head man and what you need as a player and what you're looking for as a family for your son in my program. The seat was hot and Bob told me, he said, you just wait one day, you might be a head coach. He said, when you take that little shift to the right, and you get that first chair, you'll see how hot it is. And it was hot, very hot. You know, expectation are higher because I had all this talent. You know, I saw Terry coming up and had Terry for 4 years, had Issa for 4 years, and other my other top dogs. And now everybody thinks you're supposed to go to Columbus and win the state championship. And, you know, some of the practices were like events versus practice where you're sitting out 30 chairs. And one day the AD walked in and says, is this practice or is this a party? What's going on? So I had to make a tough decision. We get beat up pretty good when we were number one in the area, playing number two in the area, Cleveland Heights, and they whipped up on us. And I just felt I had lost control a little bit of the program and the team. And I came back and I told the guys, I said, you didn't lose this game. I did. And I'm telling you right now, we're having closed practices. Moms, dad, aunties, uncles, cousins. I mean, because, you know, Terry was big, East was big. Everybody wanted to come and just watch.
Yep.
And felt it. I'm coaching, but you're looking at the baseline with all these people. So I made a decision to shut down practice from that day on. We didn't lose another game until we lost to go to Columbus. We lost the regional final to St. Ed's that year. Never forget. Lost by 5 to St. Ed's to go to Columbus. But, you know, making those decisions, you know what I mean? And sometimes your decision may not be popular, but it's the right thing to do. You know what I mean? And being okay in your skin to make those hard decisions, knowing that you're going to ruffle some feathers, but it's the best thing for your team. And then articulating the why behind it. So as a principal, as a counselor, as a teacher, you always have to give the why. If you're really trying to communicate true learning, I think the why is big. And I try to always answer the why. You might not like it, but I'm going to try to explain it.
Is that different from when you started? Is that different? Did you have to give the why as much when you first started your career as you do now?
In the 90s, it's more like when you and I came up, sometimes mom and dad would give you that dissertation answer. And sometimes they would give you this phrase right here, because I said so. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So in the 90s, I coached more because I said so. I'm the head coach. You do what I tell you to do. You know, as the 2000 era hit, you know, I still got a lot of because I said so in me. But I try to. Here's why we have to do it this way. This is look at the video. Look at our past success. Look at our current success. This is the why. You know what I mean? So, yes, that definitely has evolved. Yes.
All right. X's and O's wise. How do you go about building the way that you play on offense, the way that you play on defense? Who are maybe your coaching influences? And then how much do you adjust year to year what you do based on what you have in terms of personnel?
I would say I still got a touch of Bob in me, but it definitely has evolved with, you know, especially the pandemic. You know, it was so many podcasts.
Yep.
And that I got invited to for D1 coaches talking, and I got all kind of notes on different things. And I go to Nike camps and clinics that were held up there at Cuyahoga Heights High School. Every year they would bring all the top Division I coaches up there on Friday, Sunday. And I'll stay all 3 days. And some of those things, man, I mean, you got to be careful because you would hear so much good stuff. You could literally scrap everything you do every year.
Yeah, you could.
And start from scratch. So I learned that, no, that's not what I should be doing. Just let's go with the focus and objective that I'm going to try to find 3 to 5 things that we can do differently to make our press breaker better, to maybe a better set for the personnel we have, out of bounds play, based on out of bounds play, a quick hitter, whatever. Philosophy on the presses, this press versus that press, you know, game time adjustments, skill development. So try to get not as much because it was becoming overwhelming a few times, like, gosh, there's so much good stuff. Maybe what I'm doing is not good, but I quit doing that. I have a couple guys up in West Virginia that I consult with. Jimmy Clayton's one of my guys. And just when you're watching college basketball or the NBA, I always have a legal pad by me, a piece of paper. I see something nice that I think, I think that'll work well in our system. I might write it down and put it in, you know what I mean? So, yeah, and just going to games, you know, like I said, I always go to Columbus and just pick up on different nuggets. I went this year and I got like 5 keys that I'm going to emphasize this upcoming season to kind of help us get to that level. So yeah, I'm always trying to learn and get better. Yeah.
I think that's really a key when you talk about becoming the best coach that you can be. When you start and think back to the beginning of your career to where you are now, and sort of the whole theme of what we've been talking about is learning and growing and trying to get better, whether it's as an educator, as a mentor, as a coach. And, you know, that can cover things you do off the court. It can cover things that you do on the court in terms of X's and O's and dealing with your players and trying to win games, which ultimately is one of the most important things that you try to do as a coach, in addition to having an impact on the kids that are in front of you each and every day. When you think back to the best players you've coached, and obviously Terry Rozier is one of those players, when did you know that, what made him different maybe from some of the other kids that came through the program, not just in terms of his elite athleticism or things, skill level on the basketball floor, but was there something about his mentality or the way he went about his business that let you know early on that, hey, this guy, maybe you didn't know he's going to make it to the NBA, but you thought, hey, this guy has an opportunity to do something special because he has these character traits that just make him stand out from some of the other kids that he's coming up through the program with?
Just love to play basketball, you know, in his free times, playing basketball, after school, playing basketball. And that's what he enjoys doing. He played a lot at Zelma George and other local gyms in the greater Cleveland area. Competitor, just love to compete. Strong dislike for losing. Whether you're watching him or not watching him, like, you know how it is when you as coaches, they're playing some 5-on-5 and or going through some drills, and you're talking to your coaches about the next drill or what they need to work on in the latter part of practice. And when you're not watching, there's certain guys that kind of, you know, become lackadaisical and don't go as hard. He wasn't the kind of kid that would call him out, but he would come to me on the low and say, hey, coach, so-and-so is not going hard. Or if we're running line drills, trying to get in better shape, he'd say, hey, coach. He wasn't doing it in front of him. You know, I tried to make him a verbal leader, but that just wasn't him. At that time, he is now. But he would come tell me, like, this player, that player, they're not touching line, coach. So his attention to detail, want to be great, really. And every year he added something to his game. Every year he came back better and better and better. And, I knew pretty quickly I had something special. I knew pretty quickly. Yep.
Yeah, that's a great feeling. Having an opportunity to coach somebody who gets to that level, I'm sure, one, was gratifying in the moment. And then I'm sure, just again, you've had, as you mentioned earlier, you've had a bunch of kids that have had success at the college level, and you've had people who have had success outside of the basketball floor. But to see somebody succeed at the highest level on the basketball court, I'm sure as a high school coach, has to be tremendously gratifying to know that you played at least some small part in helping him to achieve what is, let's face it, when everybody's in second, third, fourth grade, we all have that dream of someday, hey, we'd like to lace him up and play in the NBA. To have one of your players be able to do that, I'm sure it was a thrill the first time you got to go and sit and watch him play in an NBA game in the arena in person. I'm sure that was a thrill for you.
It was big time thrill, man. Big time thrill. And I remember telling him, I said, man, you can't do what I do, man. And man, you need to work your tail off, make sure you got your grades, make sure you got your ACT score, and get on down the road to Louisville and let Rick coach you up and try your best to have a good enough career down there to get yourself to the league or overseas. I said, I just don't see you doing what I do. You're not a 9-to-5er. I told him that like every day. You're not a 9-to-5er, Terry. So let's see what you can do, buddy, in terms of that next level.
That's awesome.
It is super cool to see him. Like, he's flourishing, you know, but he has that. I mean, that desire to be great. And I knew once he got there, he was going to seal the deal. I did. I knew he was going to do it. Yeah.
I think that's one of those things where if you're talking about guys that are in the NBA, and obviously that there's players that get to the NBA that maybe don't have that maniacal work ethic, but they just are so unbelievably talented that their talent allows them to be there despite maybe a lack of some of the intangibles that we might love as coaches. But for the most part, 95% of those guys who are in the league, you know, there's 150 other guys, there's 300 other guys, there's 500 other guys walking around with the same level of physical tools as them. But it's just that mentality and that work ethic and that maniacal desire to be great it's what separates. It's why some guys make it and some guys don't. And you could probably take that down from the NBA to who makes it at the college level to who makes it as a high school player. And just, again, that work ethic and that ability to put in the time that it takes. It reminds me of that Nick Saban quote that, you know, if you want to be great, there really is no other answer. It takes what it takes. And right. you've got to put the time in and you got to really work at it in order to be successful. All right. Before we wrap up, Danny, I want to give you one more question here, and it's a two-parter. And the first part of it is, what is your biggest challenge? If you look out over the next year or two, what's your biggest challenge that you're facing? And then number two, when you wake up in the morning and you know you're going to go into school and you're getting an opportunity to coach your kids there at Shaker Heights, what's your biggest joy that you get from what you do on a day-to-day basis? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
My biggest challenge is staying very enthusiastic, keeping that passion for being a difference maker in my young men's lives each and every day, and trying to do the very best job I can to help them have the ability to be great students, great ambassadors for our Shaker Heights community, and being that role model to allow them to understand when much is given, much is required. And when you put on that Shaker Heights uniform, it's more than basketball. It's being able to be a role model as a student athlete at the high school, whereas the second, third, and fourth graders are watching. And they are aspiring to become maybe a future Raider, and helping my guys understand that it's bigger than basketball, and they have to embrace that responsibility and that challenge of doing what's right when no one's watching. Some things I try to teach them is there's a difference between character and reputation. Character is who you are when no one is watching. Reputation is who people think you are. And so a challenge for me is, and my staff is, to on a daily basis try to make sure we're doing things that builds character more so than reputation.
And your biggest joy?
My biggest joy is that I've transitioned back into the job that gave me great fulfillment. Like I said, I taught for about 6 years, and then I became a school counselor, department chair of counseling at the middle school. I did that for like 12 years. And then I got, you know, encouraged and kind of got into administration and had a great run at that for 16. But it was kind of pulling me to kind of get back to what I really, really enjoy. And I enjoy the process of helping kids. Like right now, a big piece of my job is helping seniors get ready to apply for colleges and get into their first choice schools. A big piece of my job right now is helping juniors make plans academically with their course selection for senior year. Same process for 10th to 11th, 9 to 10, and rising 8th graders who are going to be 9th graders. And just having those conversations with parents, being that facilitator of information that can do it, where if I don't know the answer, I know how to go research it, find it, and get it to you. And hearing that kid kind of light up through just maybe another little story about, you know, why it is that you have to take this class and how it's going to help you in the future, and seeing the understanding occur in their eyes. At first, it's frustration. Well, why did I do it like that? I don't want to do that. Like, I want to graduate early. Why I got to take 7 classes? Just having that conversation to get to understand, you know, the why behind it. Like, I had a conversation today, and the young lady just didn't understand why she had to take 7 classes. I thought I had all my credits. I want to get out here early, you know, all that. And I was very patient, and I wanted to explain it in a way that it was layman's terms and she understood the why. And I just kept driving the point home to her that I don't want you to leave this room until you have your why. I want you to understand. And some counselors, you know, I remember my counselor in high school, that they weren't that patient like that. I mean, they weren't giving us that motivation that you're the best and can be the best. And here's why you can be the best. So I just enjoy that process. I'm enjoying, you know, Principal Julie comes to me from time to time and says, hey, man, I don't know what you said to that kid, but I saw their parent in Hynens and they are singing your praises. You know what I mean? That, that just makes you go a little bit extra, you know, knowing that people are seeing the quality of your work. And when they see your boss, your principal at the local grocery store there or at a PTO meeting, they're telling him, hey, my daughter came home, my son came home. They had an interaction with Danny Young and oh my God, we love the fact that he's our kid's counselor. You know, that, that makes you feel good. You know what I mean? And I have to be very honest with you. I love being a principal. There were some great joys in being a principal, but I got to be honest with you. You don't get a lot of that in terms of.
You're not getting that much. You're not getting that much love. Yeah. You're not getting that much love.
You're not getting that much love as a principal, man. You know what I mean? Like when it's time to exit the building at the end of the school year, you see the teachers walking out with like mega bags of gifts from their students. My bag. Yeah, I get some. I used to get some. I'm not gonna say that. There are a few years where I was loaded up just as much as teachers. You know what I mean? But most of the time, the teachers and those school counselors get that love because you're in the front line. You know, you're in the front line with those kids, and so I'm really really enjoying that process each and every day. That entered that high school, you know, trying to be a difference maker, you know?
Absolutely. That's great stuff. And before we get out, Danny, I want to give you an opportunity to share how people can connect with you, whether that's social media, email, website, whatever you want to share. And then after you do that, I will jump back in and we'll wrap things up.
All right. If anybody wants to follow me, I'm a Twitter guy. My Twitter handle is @dyoung42. And if you need to email me, my email address is hdannyyoung42@gmail.com. So those are probably the two best ways that if you want to reach out and connect and have some conversation around whatever we talked about or anything around education, those would be the two best ways to get in contact with me.
Fantastic. Danny, we cannot thank you enough for jumping on with us tonight. It has been an absolute pleasure to get a chance to know you, to learn more about your program at Shaker, to learn more about you and what makes you tick and the impact that you're having as a mentor to not only your basketball players, but the students that you come in contact every day in your role as an educator. So for that, I say thank you. And to everyone who's a part of our audience, thanks for listening tonight. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.